Welcome everybody to the very first episode of Marathon Melodies. I'm super excited to show this off. It's been a real passion project of mine, so this is really cool. I'm just going to quickly run through the concept of the show. So every Sunday from now, I'm going to have a new young musician on, whether they be part of a band, an orchestra, their own solo act, whatever. And we're going to be talking about how lockdown and life in general has affected their music, their mental health, and, you know, just talk about other interesting topics. During each episode, I'll be asking my guests to create a short playlist of songs that have a real kind of emotional connection to them. I very much encourage you to listen along, because I'll be publishing each playlist that the artist makes, and you can listen to these songs before, after, in tandem with us, whatever you want to do. You can find the link to this playlist in my Instagram bio, which is marathon_thoughts. Then follow this playlist to get updated weekly. My first guest is the wonderful Mr. Kai Bosch. He is a London-based producer, singer, and songwriter, and he currently has an EP in the works, which he may be teasing at the end of this. So please sit back, relax, and enjoy our rambles. Thank you so much. Good morning, afternoon, evening, whatever time it happens to be when you're listening. My name is Kieran, and today I am joined by the smoky, mysterious man, Mr. Kai. Thank you for joining the show today.
Hello.
How are you doing?
Thank you very much. I'm really excited, actually. I've never done a podcast before, so exciting. I'm hoping
first time.
I'm hoping I didn't say anything embarrassing that's going to come back and haunt me, but you know, it's fine.
No, embarrassing is good.
Embarrassing
good. Yeah. Is memorable.
Yeah,
embarrassing
exactly.
Is stick in the mind. We're here to entertain today.
Exactly.
Part one, solitude.
So, as we all know, concept of the show is we have a little chat and
nice. We
also talk about a few songs that have maybe helped you through some rough times. We've been going through a lot of rough times recently.
Oh, absolutely.
So those songs are more important than ever right now.
Yeah, exactly.
So speaking of, how are you finding this lockdown? How has it been treating you?
Well, I think it's kind of one of those things where it's like I've kind of settled into it now, where you know, with each one you get kind of more and more fatigued, but it's kind of one of those things. And I think I've got to be I'm really lucky that I have kind of my bedroom is kind of my sanctuary at the moment, and I'm always in here. And I think I'm really lucky that I have that escape where I can just lock myself in my room and make music or cry or, you know, whatever kind of helps me get through it. But it's
you got to do.
Exactly. Whatever I got to do. And I'd very much like to get out of this at some point. So it's kind of for the best. Yeah. No, it's really nice. And I think with each kind of lockdown being kind of, I mean, by myself quite a lot. I mean, I'm by myself quite a lot anyway, but it's kind of, with each lockdown I've noticed that it's really kind of been good for kind of helping me be much more introspective and reflective and self-aware. So it's been for my creativity. I've actually really benefited from it, I think. And I look back and I all the stuff that I've made in the past year since this all kind of started, and I feel that a lot of the songs that I've made wouldn't have happened had this not all happened. So I'm actually not feeling like, you know, it's kind of ruined my life too much. I think it would be a different story if, like, I don't know, I released, you know, if I started my project or, you know, started releasing as this started happening, because obviously it would have thrown a bit of a spanner in the works, kind of in terms of getting out there and being able to perform and stuff, which is such a big part of kind of, you know, being a musician.
Absolutely. I mean, you think about all of the big mainstream artists who were meant to have dropped something last year. You know, yeah. We had all of this build up, all of this hype for, you know, possible Kendrick Lamar, possible Rihanna, possible all of this, like all these big names getting thrown around.
Yeah.
And then, you know, so much of an artist's lifestyle is touring and promoting, and to lose all of that must have been, you know, such a curveball.
Exactly. And I mean, you know, on every scale, I think it's just touring's kind of the biggest source of income for a lot of people. And I think, you know, with everyone that works in the touring industry as a whole, but then also for artists as well, it's kind of a big chunk of kind of livelihood as a musician that's kind of been taken away. And I think I feel so sorry for everyone who's been missing out. And I think that for me personally, I've kind of dodged a bullet, kind of missing that chunk of not being able to perform and stuff. And now it's because we're in the thick of it, you know, the plan's very much, it's like, well, we're gonna start when everything's kind of over, so I can perform and do all this stuff like, you know, you usually would.
Yeah, it's about finding the right little moment.
Yeah.
Would you say you're more anxious or excited to see the reception?
Do you know what? I think it's one of those things where ask me again when I'm, you know, 2 weeks away from releasing my first song, and I will probably am I allowed to swear?
Of course, swear away.
Okay, well, there we go. I will be absolutely shitting it, honestly, probably, knowing me. But at this point in time, listening to all my stuff that I'm hopefully going to be releasing, I'm really, 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 like, unimaginably excited. Really, really, honestly. And it is. It's every single moment of the day I'm thinking about my music, and I'm thinking about getting things out into the world. So I actually today have been focusing on finishing up what is going to be the debut single. So it's properly, it's been a day of real, like, reflection. I think it's good to kind of have nerves to an extent where you're taking into account kind of palatability and etc. etc. It's like, okay, does this sound like, objectively, it's good to be nervous about how things are going to go, because then it means you can kind of iron out
all the
creases. But I think also to an extent, it can get to a point where if you're so nervous, you just sabotage yourself and you upper limit. And I think it's taken me so long to work through all that, to a point where it's just kind of, it's sometimes this voice at the back of my head on the lower days, but then it's just, you know, I just try and bounce out of it and bounce out of that mindset, because I'm a big believer in manifesting. And I think you know, having that mindset that it's all going to go well, which is what I hold myself in usually, I hope that having that mindset will, you know, manifest in my real life.
I was going to ask, are you able to apply that same thinking about your music to your everyday life? Like,
yeah.
If you find yourself stressing over something, can you easily pull yourself out of that?
Yeah, and do you know what? I think, here we go, proper deep stuff. I kind of hit rock bottom very early on in my life. Not very early on, but like, I think I hit rock bottom in like secondary school. So hitting rock bottom in secondary school, I've had a good few years now to kind of build myself back up from that and learn from kind of how to deal with my emotions. I think so, to the point now where it's like, I'll have, you know, a bad day, a bad week maybe, but I think I've really kind of figured out what's the best way for me to get myself out of that. And for me, the biggest way that I kind of work through things and I kind of come out of that kind of pit is through making music and kind of communicating how I feel internally into a song which can then be heard by everyone else. And I think that's probably why I became so addicted to making music, because for me it was addictive. I started, the minute I started, I stopped making instrumentals and I started writing lyrics and singing, was the moment that it was, it kind of, everything clicked for me and it became very addictive, because it was like, oh my God, I'm dealing through all these kind of really tough emotions at like super speed compared to how I used to. And it's like, wow. And that's how I deal with everything now. Oh my God, my voice just cracked. I was worried that was going to happen. My voice cracks quite a lot, actually.
But, live on air.
Exactly.
So just linking that back to what you said earlier about how you find yourself spending a lot of time with your own company, would you say that music has sort of been like the perfect outlet for that? Because if you're not surrounding yourself with people, then at least you can kind of indulge in something on your own.
And in kind of the most kind of pretentious metaphor, I suppose that music has kind of been my company. It's really interesting. It's like I don't really think about it when I write. I just say whatever's in my head and it kind of flows out. It's kind of like, I kind of think it's like unblocking a drain or something. It's like, you know, I think for me, the hardest part of a song is the starting of making one. Not actually the production wise, but writing wise. The hardest part is writing the first line. And then it's like writing the first line, then everything else kind of just comes out, and then I have a song. So I write songs really quickly, usually kind of in one sitting. And I think in terms of music being my company, it's kind of like I'll say something through my music and then I won't really think about it. I'll just keep making. And then at the end, I'll sit down and I'll have this song in front of me, and it's everything I've been feeling echoed back to me in a way that I can process it, I think. And I'll say all this stuff and then I'll sit back and I'll listen to it and I'll be like, wow, that was on my mind. Okay.
So, and you can almost take your own material and then apply it to possibly, you know, future issues you may be going through. So you could go back to a song you wrote a year ago and be like, ah, okay.
Exactly. And it's kind of like a catalogue of emotions. And then it's like, how am I feeling today? Oh, I'm feeling this way. I'll listen to that song. It's funny, actually. The song, my debut song is actually just like, I wrote it from a place of, I think it was kind of more fiction at that point, or like it was very melodramatic, or in some sense it was about kind of a kind of relationship running dry, or kind of just not feeling, kind of that honeymoon phase being over in dating someone, and it's like, oh, I don't like you that much, actually. In the nicest way. And it was weirdly prophetic, because like the thing is, at that point I don't actually think I'd experience it that hard, and then give it a few months and it occurred, and everything that I was saying in this song kind of happened, and I was like, oh my God, I kind of predicted my future. And that was nice, because then I got to listen to my song for a good few weeks as I processed what just happened. But yeah,
and like you said, music being some company for you to help you deal with that.
Exactly. And I think for me, I listen to my own music or I listen to other people's music, my immediate response to feeling anything is I'll listen to music. Sometimes maybe not for the best. I'm when we were kind of discussing the concept of this show, where I put playlist of songs that have kind of got me out of tough times, I'm very prone to doing the complete opposite and listening to really sad songs that kind of make things worse. But I think I have them, don't worry. But I think what I love is I love hearing other people singing about experiences similar to mine. And the thing is, it's like with a lot of songs, they'll, you know, in their head it'll be about something completely different to what I went through, but it's the fact that Mm-hmm. That's what I love about music, is that I can project my experience onto someone else's song. A kind of creative process that I've started adapting is that I noticed that because it's like such an emotive and kind of physical thing for me in making music, it's so mm-hmm. draining sometimes. And I think when I draw from my own experience, I'll like write a song and then be absolutely creatively exhausted for like a good few days after.
Yeah.
So what I like started doing recently is I've started watching like kind of really kind of sad indie films,
mm-hmm.
and then like finding a scene that like really resonates with me or really kind of speaks to me, and then I'll just mute the film and I'll just play that scene over and over again, and I'll start producing an instrumental for it, and then I'll start writing a song over the film. So it's kind of like it's kind of a reverse of kind of, you know, a soundtrack for a film, but it's like I'm just gonna make my own soundtrack to this scene. And it's actually, so far, it's worked really well in terms of really kind of creating, you know, putting me in a scene that isn't my own. So it's not quite as exhausting, but kind of still has that kind of punch of kind of being a very real thing that someone's been through. And it's kind of, it's nice to have, instead of just absolutely plucking, you know, the most minuscule details of moments from my life, it's like it's sometimes nice to have a visual thing going on, which can kind of, you know, for me, I've just you know, I'm not sure whether it's kind of some sort of along the lines of synesthesia. Have you heard of synesthesia?
I have, yeah. I,
so kind of the relation of kind of, you know, one sense with another. And it's like, I guess to an extent for me, I'm not even sure if it is synesthesia, but it's like, I love creating kind of a sound. When I'm like looking at these films, I'll like look at a scene. So like, say it's like happening at night and it's really quiet, or like, you know, it's 5 a.m. and the sun's coming up and it's really dimly lit and you can hear the birds and it's, you know, a really beautiful scene. And I'll try and kind of just turn the music into that, if you get what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of, you know, what sounds like 5 a.m. with, you know, birds in a kind of, you know, in the winter in a room. And I really love that challenge of kind of really kind of sculpting a song around that.
Part 2, flashback.
So I really want to hear what you've got in store for us. So if you're ready to go,
let's go for it.
Let's talk about one of these songs.
Yeah. So this took me forever to put together because I am such like, I do not take playlists lightly. Like every playlist I make, I will put so much thought into. So this took me a good few hours, and then even up to like a few hours ago.
Wow.
Yeah. And like, even this was like 7 songs. I properly went through the entire, like every playlist I've ever made. So yeah, my first song is Dirty Cash by Dizzy Rascal from his fourth album.
Wow.
Yeah, from his fourth album, Tongue in Cheek. And it basically...
That is a surprise.
It's quite, yeah, it's basically, it is the song that just, it's from my childhood. Like my, when me and my mum moved to Cornwall when I was 4 or 5, from Scotland, with kind of, you know, it's just me and my mum in a Vauxhall Corsa or something, like a tiny car. And basically the Dirty Cash was on the Tongue in Cheek CD, which my mum bought from Tesco, and we used to drive around listening to Dirty Cash. And it was my favourite one, and I think I came back to it in the first lockdown. No, I didn't actually. I came back to it because me and my friend Ollie, we started getting into DJing, and we created a DJ duo called Bish Bosh, which is obviously a play on
great name
on my surname, and basically
great surname, may I add. Great,
yeah,
surname.
Thank you very much. It's totally fake. but yeah, we were going through, and I suddenly remembered, oh my god, Dirty Cash by Dizzy Rascal. And I honestly, it's my favorite part of our DJ set, which we never got to perform because lockdown happened, etc., etc. But my favorite part of the set was with Dirty Cash going into Holiday by Madonna, and yeah, oh, so it's honestly sounded so good. I was so into it. I was like, this is it. And uh-huh. Basically, yeah, so then obviously that never happened, and I ended up back in Cornwall, and I don't know, just this song kind of came back to me, and it really comforted me. You know, it reminds me of kind of that childhood before kind of secondary school type, you know, no problems whatsoever. It just brings me back, and I love the song, and
yeah
it's just a really good kind of uplifting song, and I did a lot of kitchen dancing to Dirty Cash for Dizzy Rascal, so yeah, that is,
I mean,
my
what more can you ask for?
Exactly. So that is my first song, and
we all want the Bish Bosh reunion tour.
Oh, absolutely. Bish Bosh after parties, after, you know, this is all over. Like, we're available for events. Just, you know, email me. yeah. So moving on to my second song.
Uh-huh.
I have chosen Killing Me Softly with his song, but the Fugees version. I do also love that, isn't it Roberta Flack, the original? I'm gonna check that.
I think so.
I don't want to butcher that, but I think the original is Roberta Flack. Yeah, it is. And both versions actually I am familiar with and love, but again, the Fugees version was kind of, again, part of my childhood. This was in, you know, like, remember back in the day before, like, cars had, like, Bluetooth or aux?
Uh-huh.
And you just have that, like, you'd have those massive catalogues of CDs that you'd have, like, in the side door, and you'd pick it out. And I think I came across this song, like, one day, and it was just, I loved it. I really, really loved it. And actually, this Killing Me Softly with his song by the Fugees was probably the first song that I like sung ever, or kind of, it was, I think this song probably helped me learn to sing in a way. I was a very secret singer. Not even my parents knew I sung until I was 17. So like, but like, for throughout,
wow.
Kind of, yeah, like a very, very long process of no one knowing I sung.
Yeah.
But whenever my parents, you know, from like 13, it must have been, whenever I was home alone, I'd put on Killing Me Softly with his song and sing it, and then I'd learn it on the piano and all that stuff. And again, like, this song's just kind of stuck with me throughout kind of, you know, everything. Just keep coming back to this song and how much I love it. And, you know, it just never grows old for me. I love it so much.
Miss Lauryn Hill, to me, will forever be one of the greatest rappers of all time.
Yeah.
And that cannot be disputed.
No, agreed.
Like, her impact is, you know, you've got Kanye's, you've got, you know, all of these big deals. But for what she did for the female rap scene...
Oh my
like,
god. Yeah.
She's really what put them on the map.
Yeah.
And I mean, we have her to thank for the huge surplus of female MCs that we have today.
Yeah.
Which, you know, 5 years ago, barely any. You know, we had like Nicki and, you know, a handful of others, but Miss Lauryn Hill is really who started the movement.
Yeah. Absolutely. Her voice. just that run on his, like, the when she says his song at the end of all the choruses, I like, that was my thing. I absolutely spent years trying to get that run, and like, oh, I just, amazing, just the whole song, love it. Yes, okay, moving on. This is kind of a bit more of a kind of generic Kai, 14-year-old Kai fave kind of this. So I have this song got me through a lot in secondary school. So the song is Oh No, okay, by Marina, formerly known as Marina and the Diamonds.
Okay.
And that song is like, it's just, I think it's the production, it's the vocal delivery. I think Marina's early work is just so, like, unapologetic and amazing. And this song, it's like meant to be kind of quite sarcastic and kind of a commentary on kind of a striving for fame, but for some reason, like, the lyrics just really, like, they helped me get through secondary school. Like, I think the opening line is like, don't, what is it, oh my god, I've had a total mind blank, hang on, don't do love, don't do friends, I'm only after success. And for some reason, 14-year-old me was like, yes. It was like, yes, that's it. and like, forevermore, like, the video is amazing and she is amazing. And there's something about that song, it's like, kind of, it's so sarcastic and kind of humorous, but in the most awesome way. And it's just bright and it's fun, and it's kind of one of those songs where it's like, you could be in any mood, and if you put it on, it kind of raises your vibration in terms of, like, it just makes me feel powerful. It's like, I know the song is totally sarcastic and kind of about how maybe that's not the best outlook, is, you know, to not have love or friends in your life, but it's like, yeah, I don't need love, I've, you know, kind of properly, you know, I'm gonna focus on my career type stuff. And it's weirdly empowering, despite that not be, again, back to this kind of projection thing, kind of, you know, it's I'm projecting my own meaning onto it, but it doesn't matter because it makes me feel good, so.
Well, yeah, I think the whole empowerment movement, that, because, you know, when you're figuring yourself out, when there's questions of sexuality running through your head, something, having a figure like that in your life, someone who just, when you listen to them and it makes you feel powerful, it's like, you know, screw everyone else, don't need them, focus on me. Because so often,
exactly,
when you're having those confusing thoughts, it's like you're feeling shunned, you're feeling compressed, you're feeling weird, it's like you're not feeling like you can be bright and large. So when you when you have that song that's like, I'm sick, I'm amazing, I'm so great, you know, it's necessary.
So, you know, I was just going home and dancing, that was pretty much it. Oh, speaking of, I was so into Just Dance back then, but like totally in secret, like no one knew. But when I was going home, I was playing Just Dance on the Nintendo Wii, and we've actually just got a Nintendo Wii for our flat, and just revisiting everything. It's like, God, I did not know that, like, I'd be playing the same games that I was 10 years ago on a Nintendo Wii. Like, so good, so good. But I was so good at Just Dance.
To this day.
Yeah.
To this day, I am playing Mario Kart on the Wii.
Oh, no. I played it today. I played Mario Kart today. That's what I did with my day, was I played Mario Kart on the Wii. The best. Yeah. So good. I think that the Wii has the longevity, whereas others just don't.
Okay. Most important question. Who do you play as on Mario Kart?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked this, because I'm really proud of my answer, and I honestly, so I always, 100%, I always play as Daisy. Always Daisy. She just gives off...
Ooh, left field.
Yeah, but do you know what? She gives off kind of LGBTQ plus vibes. She just, she gives me, or she's an or she's an ally, but, you know, she just...
Yeah.
You know, she feels like she's part of the team, you know? And
yeah,
always Daisy. And do you
know what?
More
so than Peach, I would say.
Well, that, well, yeah, Peach, but I think Peach gives me vibes if it's like, you know, I'll be an ally until I get a homophobic boyfriend. Kind of type of thing.
Mamma mia. Due to the length of our conversation, this is going to be a two-parter. So don't worry, the second part is already uploaded. So if you want to carry on listening, you can go ahead, run straight into it. No worries at all.